The festive season is all about giving. That's why SEAT's beautifully created winter drive gives you even more. Until January the 23rd, a voucher code will be waiting for you at seat.co.uk. Download it to get an extra £1,000 off on top of all our existing offers across the SEAT range, including our award-winning SUV, the SEAT Ateca. Now that's a real gift. New car sales only. Cars must be ordered by 23rd of January 2017. T's and C's apply. Visit seat.co.uk to find out more.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Off the Post. We're back in 2017. I'm Russ Cohen. We've got Anthony Mangione. And how are you?
Russell, I'm doing well. How are you? Well, Happy New Year, I guess we could say.
Good.
Belated.
Same to you. Yep. Same to you. I saw your picture at the Golden Gate Bridge, and I thought of one that I took of myself back in like 2000 at the Golden Gate Bridge. I don't know if it had all that orange paint on it like it does now. I don't know if it did back then. I have to go look at it.
It was very noticeable. I mean, it was, my wife's a photographer and everything, and it was, especially with that sky being as blue as it was quite the sight that morning. It was really, really
nice shot.
To visit there for the first time. Yeah.
Nice shot indeed. All right. So as the hockey season rolls on here, we're going to welcome in Allison Lukend from BuckeyeEstateHockey.com. She's a beat writer for the Columbus Blue Jackets, who really are ripping it up this season. Allison, how are you?
Hey, I'm great. Thanks for having me back on, guys.
Anytime. Anthony suggested it. No, I'm just kidding. We loved having you last time. I was going to try and make up something. I couldn't do it. I had to be nice.
So somebody had to be proactive in getting good writers on.
Right. That's a good point. So let's talk about this season. And Allison, first thing that comes to mind for me is I did a preseason Calder list, and I had Zach Werenski on it. But the problem was I couldn't put him in the top few spots, and I even wrote on there the reason I couldn't is because I really didn't know how much John Tortorella was going to play him. I have to believe you're probably a little shocked at the amount of leeway he's given him. Of course, he's given him great results, but I was afraid he was never going to get that shot.
Yeah, it's funny. I had the season preview for him too, and I had him getting some minimal time on the defensive core as well, and kind of earning Torts' trust and feeling mm-hmm. his way through the NHL. And I mean, I'm sure we'll get into this too, but Torts really spent this summer having some conversations talking about changing the way that this team played, and the way that Werenski can play was really the linchpin of that, him and Seth Jones. So I'm as shocked as you are, but what an impressive performance that kid is putting on this year.
Certainly in terms of really a major, certainly structurally the Blue Jackets is certainly much different. Obviously one of the biggest linchpins as well was the acquisition of Seth Jones and the trading of Ryan Johansson, and how that has now basically allowed Alexander Wennberg to really sort of step into a primary role. And he's really taken the ball and run with it, hasn't he?
Yeah, it's, again, another player that if you had said this is where he would be, I don't think anyone would have said absolutely. He was a pass-first guy even early into this season, but he's stepping up. He had his first multi-goal game of his NHL career earlier this season. He had his first fight of his NHL career. And he's growing into that role. After the streak here, he is someone that Torts is now saying, kind of, find your way back to the way you were playing in that streak, find your way to control the game a bit more again. But I mean, my gosh, the Jackets are really lucky that he grew into the role that they had open, because last year, I don't think the team thought they really would have a number one center for this season.
Yeah. And I was really high in him, and I knew he would play the role, but he's just even doing better than I thought. We look at this team and there's a lot of unsung heroes. There's a lot of guys that are just playing probably better than we thought they would. And I got to tell you, I'm really just happy there's you've got William Karlsson on that team who's just a good guy. Like, this is a guy who actually Anthony and I interviewed him second day of the draft. He just happened to be wandering around and he came on the show and
nice.
He's as down to earth as anybody. And if you remember when I asked him about his future plans, he goes, look, I'm going back overseas, man. I'm not even tempting anything. And here he is playing and playing with Columbus because he was, you know, drafted by Anaheim. But I'm really happy for him. I'm happy he's getting the time and he seems to be getting better.
Yeah, and it's funny because I just actually wrote a story on him and Wennberg. They're best friends in the world on this team. They even practice together during the off season now, and they obviously played together for the Swedish team before they both came over, before Wenny was drafted and right after William had been drafted. And on that team, William really was the jokester and, you know, one of the older guys. And now Wennberg kind of brought Karlsson into the fold, and Karlsson was kind of a quiet guy last season, but his two-way play is exceptional, and I like seeing him get some of the attention finally for sure.
Alice, with regards to, I mean, and certainly it's in the rearview mirror, but certainly going to be a focal point of the Jackets season where really they kind of came forward and really sort of established themselves as a team to be reckoned with. You had a fascinating article. We didn't get a chance, obviously, to talk to you before the break, but for Buckeyes Day Hockey called Why the Streak Was Everything and Nothing at the Same Time. And certainly it was a fascinating piece. And for those who haven't read it yet, just kind of give them a little bit of understanding as to what you meant by that double meaning in that article.
Sure. Well, Columbus really has some fantastic fans, and particularly those who followed the team for a long time. They put up with quite a bit, and the organization will acknowledge that too. But, you know, there was some stuff. There was a Puck Daddy article where people were saying, is Columbus for real? And, you know, people who love this team rightfully got their backs up and said, this is great. This streak, look at what they're doing. This is amazing. Everyone should think they're awesome. And it was awesome. But, you know, my argument was that before Columbus went on this streak, could anyone, maybe even including Pittsburgh fans, say who had the longest winning streak in NHL history? It's great. But this there's no cups awarded for having the longest winning streak in the league.
Right.
So it was kind of putting that in perspective. But at the same time, acknowledging that, again, particularly for this franchise, to have something like this happen to this team, and as you mentioned, the unsung heroes, to finally have some of these players get the spotlight, be on ESPN, you know, be on the arena cam on NHL. It's great to see the team slowly starting to build legitimacy. They don't have it totally yet, but they're finally building some real true credibility that hopefully is the beginning of a long history of that.
All right, so now going off the script a little bit, off of the Major League roster. I see tonight that Pierre-Luc Dubois got his second ever hat trick, and it seemed like on, you know, Sirius and in other places on Twitter, I had to sort of defend his play because people were watching the World Juniors, and I guess because he wasn't scoring like they're used to seeing him scoring, they assumed that he wasn't playing well. And look, he missed one open net, but he was asked to play a role, and he played a role. And then as far as, you know, in juniors, you know, he's playing center now, and it was going to take a little while for that to kick in, and obviously it's kicked in. And I'm kind of wondering how the fan base and the coverage of Pierre-Luc Dubois after the World Juniors took there. You know, were people, like, unhappy, or were they still supportive?
I think for the most part people are still supportive, and honestly it's because of the big club doing well that they are.
Okay.
I think if the club was still struggling, there probably would be a lot more focus on that and a lot more, you know, you said this guy was going to come in, he's the presumed new, you know, number one center, and look, he's not succeeding. But I think that now with what this group is doing, he's bought some time. Mm-hmm. I don't know that the majority of fans are following him this closely, again, because of what's happening with the big club. But those who are questioning it, you know, will he be long-term? But it's a lot of a longer development time frame they're willing to allow him now versus what I think people thought they needed at the beginning of this season.
Allison, with regards to the kind of the approach that the Blue Jackets have certainly have taken with regards to obviously their approach, as we've already spoken to, the approach that that John Tortorella has taken with the team. Now, obviously for yourself, and one of the areas that you certainly focus in a lot on is some of the higher end statistical analytics. Obviously, we certainly discuss a lot, but with Micah McCurdy and a few others that we certainly make our rounds with. Within the organization itself, what is your sense in terms of how does the organization have a focal focus with regards to utilizing some form of advanced statistical analysis with regards to how they've made their adjustments and their approaches going into this year?
Yeah, I do know for a fact that the Jackets have Josh Flynn on staff in their hockey operations team, and he kind of leads their analysis work. I think like most teams, what they're using, they're not going to willingly disclose to us, and I don't know. I think John Tortorella is kind of an accidental follower of analytics. He'd never admit it, right? But I kind of am playing this game, and I'm spoiling my surprise of some stuff I'm working on, but there are some quotes from Mike Sullivan and from John Tortorella that if you took the coach's name off the quote, you could see it coming from either of them. And I think that, you know, a lot of these analytics really boil down to just smart thinking about the game. We're not talking about turning the game on its head. We're talking about really focusing on some intentional things that have driven success. And I think Torts agrees with a lot of them. You know, he set a shot attempt goal for this team this year. He talks about, you know, defense joining the rush, defense being part of the offense. It's starting from the back end. I don't think he's ever going to say, you know, that that's where his methodology comes from, but I think he's living it, whether he likes it or not.
Okay. I can understand that. Now, let's talk about Curtis McElhinney, because he had only played like 7 games. He plays a bad game against the Rangers. He gets cut the next day. Eventually, the Leafs pick him up. I'm curious how that played there. I could tell you I didn't like it. Like, this was typical John Tortorella basically probably going to management saying, he's never going to play for me, so you might as well just get rid of him. And because right now things are going good, that's what happened. But how did it play out there?
Yeah, it's interesting to watch how that played out on the national non-Columbus stage, and I totally understand how it happened that way, but Curtis is an interesting one. He came in trade to the organization years ago and actually went straight to the AHL. They never thought he was actually going to play, and it was his performance in the AHL that earned him the backup spot in Columbus when they were really struggling, and he was just a really good backup. Bob was Bob. Curtis played sparingly. The organization liked that. They didn't have a lot of goaltending depth at the time, and so they liked what Curtis did. But Curtis was never good. Curtis was serviceable on ice. Curtis is a great human, let me say that, of course. But he was never good. The team was always a little bit less confident in front of him. And what happened last year, for people who were watching, again, at the AHL level, is that Columbus has found they have these two really promising young goaltenders in Jonas Korpisalo and Anton Forsberg. And so
I'm not a Forsberg fan, I got to tell you. I'll be honest about that. I'm not.
Yeah, and he's a whole – I mean, this whole thing is – I actually think this – I said going into this season this was going to be the most fascinating story for Columbus. Little did I know.
Yeah.
But, you know, Columbus was looking at these two guys and saying, okay, these guys are good. One of these guys is going to end up being our number two. That started last year, even before the Bobrovsky injuries and so on and so forth. Both of them saw some time in Columbus. Both of them were better than McElhinney last year in Columbus. This was the last year of McElhinney's contract, and I don't think, again, I understand why it played out the way it did publicly, but for people who follow Columbus closely, while they will miss Curtis McElhinney, the man, this is not a surprise, and this is something that Columbus has wanted to figure out for a while, is which one of these two younger guys is going to end up being the number two, and or is one of these two guys going to end up going to Vegas? I mean, that's the other underlying wrinkle in all of this now. But Curtis was never a long-term option for Columbus. And I think that while it's a shame he left the organization and went to Toronto, I think they would have liked to still have him as part of their depth. I don't think it's going to be viewed as a rash decision or a bad decision in hindsight.
Okay. And you get the last question.
Allison, beyond, I guess, from just a – from an over – I mean, the whole – certainly the season has been a major – has certainly been a surprise for a lot of people, certainly throughout the NHL. If you had to sort of pick out the one thing that really surprised you the most this season about this club, what would it be?
Oh, gosh. I was going to say one thing, and I was like, I don't know. You know, I think if we're talking about true surprises, I am going to go with Werenski. I thought the kid had promise. I didn't think he was going to be this good. He's 19. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. When I think about what I was doing at 19, it's embarrassing. So I think when you think about really seeing, I mean, what he could do after experience, but just a little at the AHL level, translating that to the NHL level with success and what that means for the long-term prospects for this organization, that's been the best thing.
All right. Well, listen, Allison, we really appreciate you coming on. Everybody should follow her at Allison L on Twitter, a good follow, a good reporter, and a good sport. I was going to, like I said, play snarky, and then I took a left turn instead, and I know you knew I was kidding, but sometimes viewers don't, listeners don't. So anyhow,
yeah.
Thanks, and we'll get you on soon.
You guys are great. I appreciate you guys having me on, and we'll talk soon.
Take care, Allison.
All right.
Bye-bye.
So now we welcome in Mike Ogiello, who was one of those guys killing Pierre-Luc Dubois. Let's be honest about that. And I had a sort of chat with him about that, and probably still don't agree. But, Mike, happy 2017 for this show.
Good evening, gentlemen, and happy New Year. And, yes, I will wholeheartedly admit that I was disappointed with the play of Pierre-Luc Dubois. Now, it may have been, you know, the role, as you had said, Russ, that he had been given.
Mm-hmm.
But, honestly, I think the skill set that he had and, I thought the lack of – top-end scoring the team Canada had, I thought they needed him to really, you know, contribute more offensively. And I think he took some stupid penalties in that tournament, especially in that game against the U.S. in the gold medal game. I thought he was reckless on one of those plays, and I just expected more. But, that doesn't mean he's not going to be a very good pro.
Okay. No, that's totally fair. So in 2017, what are you most happy about with the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Well, I think mostly fans are happy that they're actually consequential, that they're actually in the race for a playoff spot. That
not the fans. I'm asking you because, I'm asking what's making you happy.
The fact that Austin Matthews is a Maple Leaf. I mean, my goodness, we saw at the Centennial Classic the type of, it wasn't even his best game, and he took it over in the third period and then in overtime.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not just a good player picked first overall. I'm not going to say generational, but I think he's a franchise player. He's a cornerstone. He's somebody who
I
think
would
can
say generational. I think he is a generational player, but that's okay. I mean, I do.
Well, I don't want to jinx it by saying that.
You don't
want to
jinx
it. I'm just saying, I look at this. Yeah, I look at this guy and
it's not like we're calling Yuri
Talusti
a generational player. You know, it's Austin Matthews. It's okay.
But I think at the absolute worst, he's a 70 to 75 point center who can play defense, and he's strong on the puck and smart at 19. It can just go nowhere but up from here.
And what do you think about the Flyers in 2017? They didn't go into this 5-day break very well, and
no, they did not.
They're going to play tomorrow, and right now. People have almost forgotten about them in this city, in Philadelphia, and I almost have to point it out to people that while you're enjoying some of the other teams, what they're doing, and the hope, you know, these guys actually still made the playoffs and still have a chance to retain their playoff spot, and it's almost like they're forgotten about now.
They are, and certainly again with the basketball team specifically having the Sixers mm-hmm. having quite a run right now, which again it's just been so long for that team, you know, the laughing spot that they've been in. It's not like they've been, you know, even early on the season been fantastic, but they've got, you know, there's certainly an it personality that team has in Joel Embiid. But getting back to the Flyers. Again, you know, when you go through it, you have a 10 game, you know, winning streak, and then you follow up a 10 game stretch with you know only two wins in that circumstance, and you get your doors blown off you last weekend as the Flyers did with 11 goals against, you know, that's going to create obviously a lot of concern. The Flyers, again, not particularly, you know, not very good on the road. They're 8-12-3 on the road. That's certainly a major concern for them there. The defense has been certainly a lot of people have pointed to goaltending for the Flyers as well, but I think it's a combination of that and defense for them right now. 148 goals against is just it's not playoff caliber defense that's playing in front of Steve Mason and the newly returned Michael Neuwirth. I would have probably liked to have seen Anthony Stolarz maybe get us one or two more starts because Mason had seemed, especially at the very end of that streak, seemed particularly looked almost fatigued and spoke to that as well. And I know Marcus Hayes, one of the local columnists, general sports columnists, indicated, you know, the fact that maybe the Flyers are just, you know, are just tired after having so many games in such a quick sequence that, you know, that expenditure from that streak, and there was the inevitable come down while having so many games in a row, how the lineup is also optimized. Every team goes through that. And now again, now they get this 5-game stretch. And I know obviously Ron, you know, 5-day stretch where they were off, and obviously Ron Hextall obviously was displeased to say the least with the fact that they were getting off, but it may, depending on what happens tomorrow in New Jersey, they might have needed that stretch there to sort of clear their heads a little bit and sort mm-hmm. of reestablish themselves going into the second part of the season, the next part of the season here. So, again, they built themselves somewhat of a cushion, but again, that cushion is gone. The streak streak is pretty much gone and forgotten, and they have to tighten things up, and they also have to start getting the offense going as well, which also began to sputter out.
Something Mike and I talked about, are you worried that there may not be a number one goalie on this team, and now maybe even worry that neither guy gets extended?
Yeah, they need to – this is something that, again, where they have to kind of figure these things out right now. And this is, again, the management of Steve Mason in terms of the two goaltenders, I still probably believe more – I'm more confident in Mason than I am in Neuwirth because, again, Neuwirth, mm-hmm. while he gets hot – has injury history. If he has to play for a longer stretch, he's unfortunately has his unfortunate history of breaking down. And again, it's not just for this season, but also over the long term, what's going to be happening. I mean, you've developed all this depth, goaltending depth in the system, you know, ranked prospects and everything else with, mm-hmm. and you know, obviously we all saw in World Juniors with Felix Sandstrom for Sweden and Carter Hart's performance for Team Canada. A lot of people are excited about the future, but in the here and now, there is some legitimate questions, and I think it's going to be important for either of the two goaltenders to answer that. Now, Neuwirth looks like he's going to get the start tomorrow against New Jersey. I'm assuming Mason, obviously, will follow up after that. But at a certain point, you know, I don't think they don't want to continue with sort of a rotation situation here. They're going to need to certainly go with a goalie down the stretch, but they're going to need to manage this situation well. And in the end, again, the defense in front of them has to play better. And again, we just don't know where things are going to be at with them, especially, you know, you're asking a lot of a 19-year-old defenseman and Ivan Provorov to really handle the load the way he has been. As much as Allison was talking about Werenski, even more importantly to Philadelphia is if they didn't have Provorov, the defense
would
really be a shambles. Exactly. So
be in trouble. Hey Mike, the other day I mistakenly, you know, mentioned Clark MacArthur as a Leaf, and lo and behold, Clark MacArthur gets in the news today because he can't even get medically cleared to play for Ottawa. And I was just curious what your thoughts are about that, because he did play with the Leafs, and, you know, now he may never play again. We don't know.
Yeah, that was the conclusion I came to, and I'm hoping I'm wrong, but the reports sound like, you know, I know that he had been skating for the with the Senators for a while, hoping that he'd pass this test, and obviously with the news that came out that he's been shut down for the year, I don't think that he's ever going to play again. I mean, there's always hope, but, you know, this was a pretty good, you know, top six forward for the Leafs for a few years. They picked him up after Atlanta had walked away from an arbitration award, and he played pretty well for them for two or three seasons, and then signed a big contract with Ottawa, and for a while played pretty well for them as well. But yeah, it's a sad thing, and, you know, it's unfortunately a common story in professional sports where, you know, a linebacker like Luke Kuechly for Carolina, his career might be in jeopardy because of repeated concussions.
Yeah, and speaking of which, so Mark Stahl, who there's been very little information about, finally comes out that maybe he could play next Thursday, but of course, you know, Vigneault says that's when, if they tell me he can go, then he can go. But we don't hear any kind of updates on him. And, you know, he had the eye problem, and he's definitely had some concussions. And it does make you wonder. I mean, they definitely miss him, although I think Henrik Lundqvist at least quieted down his detractors the other day against the Leafs. But what do you guys feel about the Mark Stahl thing? Do you think that this is a guy headed down the post-concussion highway, and even if he comes back now, maybe the next one, you know, we don't see him again this year? Like, it just seems like to me like this is where he's going, but what do you think, Ann?
Shane, certainly. I mean, Stahl's had such a star-crossed career with regards to the injuries that he's suffered. Adding that to the mix, it's just – again, you got to speak certainly to what, you know, Mike alluded to, certainly with Luke Kuechly and his injuries for the Panthers, and it's just you do have to really sort of monitor things here over time to make a determination as to his long term prognosis. And again, when he's healthy, he's Stahl's an excellent defenseman, but It's you really have to start examining these things over time. I mean, he probably has to do the same as well. Obviously, you want to continue to play, but again, long term health has to be a prime concern, especially after something like that.
In the short term, I would think that I would think that if he's eligible or healthy enough to come back on Thursday, why wouldn't you just wait until after the All-Star break and give him another week? You know, don't risk anything, but you know, if it is something that's going to have long term detrimental effects, then you know I think you shut him down for the season, and you know you can, if you're the Rangers and you think you have an opportunity to win, you put him on long term injury and then you go after Kevin Shattenkirk. You open up a bunch of salary and maybe you can take that opportunity to go down that road. But I mean in the long-term picture, I mean, he's had at least two serious concussions, and when we know that the more, you know, there is a cumulative effect when these guys have more and more, it gets worse and worse and tougher to come back from. So I hope for his sake that he comes back and comes back healthy.
All right, so I want to let people know we may go 5 or so minutes into overtime, but I think an interesting story, guys, is the one of Murray Craven with the Las Vegas team. Right now, they're all sort of looking at him like he is, you know, basically doing a lot of jobs and sort of the glue of the organization and sort of really helping to mold whatever their, I guess, the RFAs they pick up and some of the other things, him and McPhee. But it seems like he's being the guy that's going to be tabbed to really do this. I'll go with you first, Ant, because I'm sure you remember him as a player. Me as a Ranger fan, hated Murray Craven in the worst possible way. But wish him no bad luck for this, because you know he's out of his playing days. And so I'm kind of curious, you know, what's your take on that? I'm sure you've followed this a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of all reports, obviously, with regards to how the blue, the Gold Knights, the Knights, however we're going to refer to them.
I know, I'm not sure yet. That's why I stayed away from it.
Yeah, we got to figure this part out first up. But he's been the Bill Foley's right hand man. I mean, in terms of getting much of the hockey organizational, just about everything. In many ways, as much as Foley is certainly the man with the money behind the scenes, in terms of how the team is invested, it's a fascinating sort of blending of some of the people that have been brought in. Now, certainly he's certainly gone by the recommendations of his general manager, George McPhee, bringing in a lot of former Washington Capitals people with regards to building up and developing players. He also seems to have brought in obviously a lot of an equal number of old and new school approaches with regards to some of the scouts certainly that he's brought in, along with obviously the Russian gentleman's name who had worked for the Capitals, who's on the tip of my tongue. He's been doing scouting, but he's also sort of an analytics kind of guy. So I do feel like Vegas is giving themselves, at least in terms of their front office personnel, a pretty good start with regards to. But again, we're not going to know anything until things are certainly put into play. But I'd have to say early on, my impressions in terms of who they brought in with Craven in charge, pretty much, for the most part, it looks like it's a pretty good setup early on here.
Mike, I was going to add this before you go. Craven doesn't believe he's going to have to compete against UFC and Cirque du Soleil and UNLV, but I don't know. Add that to the mix. Mm. But what do you think of all of it?
Well, he's going to have to compete against the Raiders because apparently, now I don't know the details of the stadium situation in Vegas, but the papers that the Raiders filed with the NFL to move. You know, the NFL season starts in September. The first NHL season there will start in October. And if the stadium is in Vegas or close to Vegas, all the splash of, you know, the first professional franchise, the NFL is going to get the jump on the NHL. So that sort of stinks, especially since the NHL was the first one to go there. So, I mean, I'm not prepared to – yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Now, I said that's interesting, but, you know, this is a Davis we're talking about, and – it wouldn't shock me if this timeline isn't the correct one, isn't the one that actually happens, because I see that there's some NFL blowback with the Chargers right now. They're not happy with the way they're handling things, and I kind of wonder if they're going to drop the hammer on the Raiders at some point.
It wouldn't surprise me one bit, because considering the history between the Davis family and the NFL, and they may also just say, you know, it may be too much movement within a 2-year period for the NFL, where you move out of, you're moving into a, quite frankly, two unproven situations already with two Los Angeles football teams and a team in Las Vegas. It could be a case where the NFL might try to pull the brakes on the Raiders, going into it. But, we'll see. Mike, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, I'm just curious. I'm not prepared to make any kind of, judgments about Las Vegas until first we see who they're going to hire as a head coach, and then see what they do with the expansion draft. And we know that every NHL team right now is going to do their utmost to bury and hide, their young players that potentially could be exposed, to the point that they'll probably make some deals under the table to get maybe throw an extra draft pick their way so they take one player instead of the other. And to me, that means the pipe dream of this team being competitive in their first year is just that. It's not going to happen.
True. I got to tell you guys, I'm laughing to myself because I'm watching ESPN and I'm watching some tennis, the Australian Open, and there was a commercial for a place in Lindenwall, New Jersey called Sugar Puddins, Puddins. I have to say, it looks like, down south kind of cooking, but just the name just sort of made me laugh a little bit. But so sorry about that, Mike. But no, I don't disagree with you. Well, it'll be interesting to see how it goes.
Russ's adult ADHD is kicking in, Mike.
It is. It is. I'll even admit this. I was fascinated because Serena Williams sat down, and the minute she sat down, there was an automated, umbrella, but a little bit bigger than that, that went over her head so she would, not have to deal with the sun. And I'm thinking, that's a pretty good invention for tennis. I'd never seen that before.
Yeah, it's called
instant shade. Yeah, it's an awning, yeah. And so I thought that was kind of interesting too. But before we go, Henrik Sedin got his 1,000th point. I thought maybe he was going to do it against the Flyers that one game, Ant, because, he got an early jump, and then they had a 5-on-3, and I'm thinking, he might do it. But he finally did it, so congrats to him, 1,000 points. That's a lot. I'm sure Mike will find a way to find a negative in it, but, Ant, I would say you're pretty happy about it, right?
I feel, how do I put this? Somewhat indifferent.
Okay.
Slightly distant, but I'm just joking. Congratulations, obviously, to Henrik on achieving that goal, certainly.
Yeah, definitely.
Mike,
congratulations.
Should he retire now? Is it over?
Well, no, because in celebration of this mark, Brad Marchand's going to step on the ice and speed bag him.
Nice.
Because he already did it to Daniel, so they have to do.
Instead of birthday punches, he's going to speed bag him. Nice.
Fantastic. Well, we're off to a great start in 2017. I think we'll sort of leave it there, and we thank everybody for waiting while we were on hiatus, and now we'll be back every week. And thanks to you guys for coming on, and thanks everybody for listening, and we'll catch everybody next time.
Take care, everybody.
7:40 and you're already running late. How? That little bundle of joy who was suddenly against wearing shoes. But you love him, so just drop him off at the gates, and on the way to the office, grab yourself an oat-so-simple porridge from McDonald's.
With over 800 drive-thrus open at 5 a.m. McDonald's. We make breakfast. Served until 10:30 a.m.